This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. It's Friday, and normally our first hour Friday is brunch with Bernie, but Bernie running for president has wreaked havoc with his schedule, as you might imagine. He's in an airplane right now and will not be able to call in today, so sorry you're stuck with me. I have, however, gone through the news, and there is, boy, do I have a list of stuff to share with you. Let's start, actually, we started with Sandra Bland yesterday, so let's start there again. This is really interesting. Two pieces to this. One, remember she told the police officer when he threw her to the ground and slammed her face into the dirt, and she complained about that, and he put handcuffs on her, which apparently actually cut her. She had lacerations on both her wrists. Old trick that cops do if they don't like you. Put the handcuffs on too tight, and they literally cut your skin, break your skin, you bleed. But the tests, yesterday, I think it was yesterday, it might have been the day before, they said, Sandra Bland had pot in her system, which is, victim shaming, right? But now it's getting interesting. Because it turns out that the level of pot that she had in her system at autopsy 3 days after she was arrested was really high. Now, I've smoked a lot of pot in my life, and probably many of you have. She did not look, in her interaction with the police officer on that, I've got to memorize this guy's name. I don't have it in front of me. Officer, what's his name? The trooper or whatever he is. I guess he was a deputy sheriff. In her interaction with that white terrorist cop, for lack of a better phrase, who terrorized her, right? Just because he has a small penis or something. Or because he's a, well, I was going to say because he's a cop, but there are some decent, there are a lot of decent cops out there. But in her interaction with him, she was not behaving like she was stoned. She was behaving like a perfectly reasonable person. And one of the questions that they asked was whether this was Waller County ADA. I'm guessing ADA is Assistant District Attorney Warren Dipram. The levels of pot in her system were so high that he was unable to say whether she might have ingested it in jail. Now, you might remember, if you've been paying attention, that she refused her breakfast a couple hours before she committed suicide. Step into the Wayback Machine and go back about 6 months or a year to when Marie Dowd went to Denver after Colorado had legalized pot. And she bought a candy bar, a pot-infused candy bar that had 10 or 12 doses of pot in it, not knowing that every little square was a dose. And she ate the whole candy bar. And she spent the whole night curled up in a ball on her bed, hallucinating, freaking out, filled with fear. And this is, a powerful, famous, grown-up, white person, reporter for the New York Times in a five-star hotel, freaking out. Can you imagine if you were a powerless African-American woman in a jail cell who had been beaten up and had your face smashed into the ground by a racist, insane white terrorist cop? And somebody put a whole pile of pot in your, or just THC, which, if you do it right, doesn't have much taste, into your food the night before? I mean, am I, like, my first thought is this is, like, wild. This is, like, paranoid. In this same jail about 6 months earlier, somebody else had hung themselves and committed suicide. This jail had been cited. The jail where Bland died, this one from Victoria Jones's Talk Radio News, Daily News Summary. The jail where Bland died was cited 3 days after her death by the Texas Commission on Jail Standards for failing to meet the minimum requirement of complete visual face-to-face observations of inmates every 60 minutes. Inspectors cited the jail for the same violation in 2012, 3 years ago, after another inmate hanged himself in his cell with a bedsheet. Excuse me, it was 3 years earlier, not 3 months earlier. But the ADA said it was unclear whether Bland ingested marijuana before or after she was jailed. She was alone in the cell. How do you ingest drugs after you're jailed if you're all alone in the cell? Raises a very, very interesting question. She also indicated that she was epileptic and that she was taking a drug called Keppra. Levetiracetam. I'm sure that's not how it's pronounced, but that's how it looks. Levetiracetam. Levetiracetam? I don't know. Anyhow, it's an anticonvulsant and an anti-epileptic, and she apparently had it with her, Keppra. Whether she had it with her in jail or not, we don't know, but it was among her possessions. Here's the prescribing information from Keppra. You can look it up on the web, which is what we did. Do not stop using Keppra without first seeing talking to your doctor, even if you feel fine. You may have increased seizures if you stop using Keppra suddenly. You may have thoughts about suicide while taking Keppra. Your doctor will need to check you at regular visits. Do not miss any scheduled appointments. That's in the paragraph about suicide. Report any new or worsening symptoms to your doctor, such as mood or behavior changes, depression, anxiety, if you feel agitated, mentally hyperactive, or have thoughts about suicide or hurting yourself. This is the drug she was taking for her epilepsy. This drug is so strong, and the consequences of not taking it properly are so great that the prescribing information says wear a medical alert tag or carry an ID card stating that you take Keppra. Keppra may impair your thinking or reactions. So if she had a pot, a very, very high dose of pot in her system, and, you know, this just raises more questions than it answers. If I was in a jail cell and I ate dinner and I suddenly discovered myself tripping, basically, because I'd been overdosed on pot and spent the whole night frightened and freaked out, when they brought me breakfast in the morning, I would probably turn it down, too. So, you know, I just tossed that out as a question. The Lafayette shooter, this guy, he turns out he had a John Russell Hauser, the guy who shot up the theater, killed two people down in Alabama or Mississippi or wherever it was. Louisiana, the state that has not only the laxest gun controls, but they actually passed a law a couple of years back, probably an ALEC law, certainly an NRA law, saying that the state can't pass laws controlling guns. Anyhow, he had a Tea Party Nation page registered in his name. Cute. And Louisiana, two of his victims are dead, seven are wounded. Just one example of the Louisiana laws. Louisiana recently enacted an NRA-backed state constitutional amendment saying, quote, the right of each citizen to keep and bear arms is fundamental and shall not be infringed, and that any restriction on this right will be met with maximal skepticism by the state's courts. The amendment also stripped out language permitting the state legislature to prohibit the carrying of weapons concealed on a person. In other words, they amended the Constitution to say the legislature could not pass a bill saying that if you want to carry a concealed weapon, you have to have a permit. Yep, it happened in Louisiana. That's Bobby Jindal country, isn't it? He went down there and said, I will pray for you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And I am just beginning. Of course, it's Anything Goes Summer, and we'll be taking, and Friday, we'll be taking your calls as well. But there's a bunch of other things here I've got to get to before we go. And welcome back. Jesse in Miami. Hey, Jesse, how you doing today?
Hey, hi, Tom.
What's up?
Hey, man, it's so much. I already comment about the lady situation. They need a special prosecutor to go after the corruption.
They need the feds. They need Loretta Lynch. I guess the FBI is already down there, so arguably they have what they need.
I wouldn't trust them no further than I could look around the corner. They need the Untouchables with an Elliot Ness.
And integrated Untouchables. Yeah.
All right, Greece.
Yeah.
What's the lessons learned from Greece? The IMF says it's unsustainable to try to pay back that debt. Germany is forgetting about the thank you Greece gave them for World War II.
Yep.
I'm almost thinking these people are beyond crazy. So the lessons learned, they had a government that don't want to go along with this, and then they put the screws to them. So what's the lessons learned? We got to find a way to go around government and the system.
No, the lesson learned, Jesse, and I know you're pretty much an expert on financial matters and fiscal matters, and
no.
I think this will resonate with you, is if you compare the European Union to the United States, right? We both share a common currency. Here in the United States, every state in the union uses the dollar. In the Eurozone, every state in the Eurozone uses the euro. The difference between, and here in the United States, we've got states like Mississippi who get massive influxes every single year of money from all the other states, right? In other words, like California is like Germany. They're sending out money that they're not getting back. And Mississippi is like Greece. They're taking in money every single day, but certainly every year.
I agree with you, but you're talking about a public economy.
No, what I'm saying is that you can't have fiscal integration without having political integration. That the whole idea of pulling together the European countries to share a common currency without sharing a common system of governance was a mistake.
That's still keeping Wall Street, the private economy, separated from the public economy. How do the public economy make money? From the private economy. If the private economy is not functioning, how do you expect the public economy to function?
Well, that's the crisis in Greece right now, and it's partly it's certainly the crisis in Greece because the austerity measures imposed on them by the Troika and by Germany have killed their economy, and when your economy doesn't run well, you don't have good tax collections because people aren't making any money, right? Everybody's salary has dropped.
Capitalism is non-sustainable.
But the point is that if the Eurozone had integrated under a federalist system like the United States, then Germany would have been paid into the Eurozone central government. And Greece would be getting money from the Eurozone central government, just like California pays into the federal government and Mississippi takes money from the federal government.
I agree, but even California, even Germany is really beyond its reasons to keep going the way they're going.
So oh, yeah.
What I'm saying is, you pretty much understand what I'm saying, but
the
point is, what will Greece do now? They're going to put derivative day islands and stuff? I mean, how far can we go with this system?
You're right, Jesse. It's going to fall apart. And I predict within a year, maybe two at the most, Greece will be back on the drachma. But we'll see. We'll see where this goes. I mean, I think that's the very best thing for them. But, you know, they still think for some reason that being in the Eurozone is necessary. Jesse, thanks for the call. It's always nice to hear from you. We'll be back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. Okay, continuing through the news. I just want to get through some of these news stories so you know what's going on. And we can, you know, throughout the next 3 hours, we can have conversations about these and pretty much anything else you want. So that's my Sandra Bland rift so far for the day. We'll see, you know, what else goes on. We've got the Lafayette guy and the Tea Party shooting. I've got a geeky science here thing that I think is fascinating. Did you know what the number? This is the New York Times in their Business Day section. Andrew Pollack wrote a piece called "Sales of Sovaldi, a New Gilead Hepatitis C Drug, Soar to $10.3 billion," which seems to be a story about a new Hep C drug. But in the second paragraph, they note that the autoimmune disease drug Humira is believed to be the world's top-selling pharmaceutical. Now, what Humira does is it suppresses the immune system. It slows down the accelerator of the immune system. And I've shared this with you before, that there's this theory, it's called the hygiene hypothesis, you can look it up, that if we keep ourselves too clean, we produce autoimmune diseases. Because our immune system is normally running a little faster than it should. Because it's, you know, it's designed to deal with that. Well, actually, the reason why it's running faster than it should is that from the time humans broke off from other primates 165,000 years ago and became our own unique species of Homo sapiens sapiens, until about 100 years ago, we all had worms in our guts, as well as hundreds of different kinds of bacteria. And I talked a couple days ago about how gut bacteria seems to not just affect health and not just affect the quality of your stool, shall we say, but also affects mood, affects cognition, affects clarity of thought. I mean, there's all and affects weight. I mean, there's all these things that seem to be affected by gut bacteria, and people, you know, increasingly people are supplementing themselves with gut bacteria supplements and finding physical and mental benefits. But that doesn't get to this issue of a hyperactive immune system. The worms that we all had, and I remember as a little kid having pinworms when I was like 7 or 8. They just ran around our school. The pinworms, you transmit them just by touching another person. They give you itchy butt syndrome. They come out at night, right? They're a little tiny thing. I mean, they're so small that they're almost microscopic. They're no big deal. They don't represent any threat to anybody. But everybody in my school had them. I had them. My brothers had them. And we all had to take these pills for a couple of weeks to kill off the pinworms. It looks like pinworms, hookworms, and there's a kind of round worm. They're called whipworms. That's it. That there's these three worms have varieties that are specific to humans that apparently co-evolved with us. And on the surface of these worms, on the body of the worms, which live inside us, they produce a chemical that downregulates our immune system so we don't expel them, so we can live with them. And we have lived with them literally as primates for millions of years. All primates have these worms. And it takes your immune system down 10 or 20%. Well, you get rid of the worms, which we did when we went to flush toilets. Right? Good sanitation gets rid of the worms. So people typically don't have worms anymore. In fact, even the pinworms that I have had as a kid, they just pretty much, you know, parents these days don't even know about this. They don't worry about it. And it turns out there was nothing to worry about in the first place. But here's this really interesting story in Science Daily. And the leading pharmaceutical now that's being sold is one that suppresses the immune system the same way the worms did. Okay, this is from Duke University. This was published last week. Here's a summary of the study. Gut worms can protect babies' brains from inflammation and long-term learning and memory problems caused by newborn infections. And I'm not talking about worm infections. I'm talking about newborns getting sick. And I'm wondering if even getting a vaccine qualifies as getting sick because it produces an immune response. And without the worms in the baby's body, the immune system overreacts. Okay, gut worms can protect babies' brains from inflammation and long-term learning and memory problems caused by newborn infections. A new study on rats has shown expectant mother rats with tapeworms even passed the protective benefits to their worm-free pups, the researchers found. The findings could point new ways to prevent or treat the chronic brain inflammation linked to cognitive disorders like Alzheimer's disease, autism, and depression. Could it be that the explosion of autism that we're getting and the worm that they were using tapeworms, roundworms, and, you know, it goes on. So could it be? Could it be? Do we need to go figure out how to get ourselves some worms? I realize that sounds totally creepy, but okay, one more geeky science thing. Oh, actually, before I get to that, this in the New York Times. This, you know, I keep saying George W. Bush in 2001, for purely political reasons, opened the gates of hell in the Middle East. Eliza Griswold writing in the New York Times on July 22nd, the headline, "Is this the end of Christianity in the Middle East? ISIS and other extremist movements across the region are enslaving, killing, and uprooting Christians with no aid in sight." They're literally going from city to city, pointing an N, which is the slur for Christianity in Islam, in Arabic, painting an M over the doors of Christian homes, and then going in and slaughtering them if they don't leave. George W. Bush, the uber Christian, remember, has set up a situation in the Middle East where countries that have had Christian populations literally for 2,000 years are seeing them wiped off the map. Amazing.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
And I'm just getting started here. Did you know that Jeb Bush has called for the end, for phasing out, that his word, not mine, phasing out Medicare? Medicare, not Medicaid, Medicare. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Tommy Boy Crown tweets to me. He says, at Tom Hartman, I've listened to you for years with humor. Your rant today about Texas jail pot white terrorist theory was beyond the pale. Nuts. Actually, it wasn't me who suggested that she might have been given an overdose of pot in jail. It was the assistant district attorney for Waller County, Texas, Tommy. So take it up with him. Jeb Bush, he was in New Hampshire yesterday. So Wednesday night, he gave a talk to what he thought was a group of right-wing cranks, and he said, you know, it's time to phase out Medicare. And so Thursday at a town hall, this woman said, we're not going to have adequate coverage for our children or grandchildren without Medicare. I paid into that for years and years, just like all these other seniors here. And now you want to take it away? Why are you always attacking the seniors? And Jeb said, well, I'm not. Here's what I said. I said we're going to have to reform our entitlement system. She says, it's not an entitlement. I earned that. Jeb Bush then says, the people who are receiving these benefits, I don't think that we should touch that. But your children and grandchildren, they're not going to get the benefits of this that they believe they're going to get or that you think that they're going to get, because the amount of money put in compared to the amount of money the system causes is wrong. Yeah, it's capped at, the tax that supports Social Security is taxed at $118,000 a year. So anybody who makes more than $118,000 a year, like Jeb Bush, does not pay into the Social Security system. As he was pressed, Bush sought to defer. Actually, his communications director, Tim Miller, said that the woman asking the question was a liberal activist. Right. No, she was a senior on Medicare. As he was pressed, Bush sought to divert attention from his comments, focusing on the media's fixation with them. This is from Politico, by the way, a piece by Eli Stokels, alleging that MSNBC and the media presented, quote, words taken out of context, exactly what I predicted would happen. Here was his initial comment. He said, we need to figure out a way to phase out this program, Medicare, for others, and move to a new system that allows them to have something because they're not going to have anything. Actually, it's, you know, the system is just fine. And here in the New York Times day before yesterday, remember back in January of this year? First week or two of January, Congress was just getting together. And the first day of Congress, they have a couple of votes. The first one is to elect the Speaker of the House. This is in the House of Representatives. The first one is to elect the Speaker of the House. The second one is to establish the rules for the House. It might be an opposite order, but anyhow, those are the first two votes. And typically, they just carry the rules over from the previous. Every Congress is a new Congress, and it happens every 2 years, right? And the Congress lasts for 2 years because there's elections every 2 years. And so this new Congress, when they established their rules, one of the rules that they made was that they may not consider legislation that would move money out of the Social Security Retirement Fund and into the Social Security Disability Fund. Or if they do consider it, it's under very, very highly restricted terms. I'd have to go back and look at it. Was it a two-thirds majority? It was something. But they set up this train wreck because, you know, at least every other year, one or the other, either the Social Security Trust Fund ends up short and takes them to the Disability Fund, or the Disability Fund ends up short and takes them to the Social Security Trust Fund. And it's not that Social Security has got any kind of problem at all. It's that, you know, you collect taxes, and the taxes are distributed, the Social Security taxes are distributed to two funds according to a formula that anticipates what those funds will need. But the reality is that every couple of years you need to adjust that. You need to move a little bit of money from one to the other. It's no big deal. It's done routinely. Reagan did it. Bush did it. Clinton did it. or Congress did it during each one of those administrations. It's just a, you know, it's just a simple piece of legislation. It's non-controversial. The Republicans said that it may not be considered until next year, the election year. In fact, I think it was October of 2016. And, or it may not be considered until it's running out of money, and that's going to be October 2016. So right in the middle of the presidential election, the Republicans are going to be saying, deceptively, oh my God, Social Security is running out of money, we got to do something, let's cut benefits. Or there will be an across-the-board 20% benefit cut to people on disability, on Social Security disability, which is a third of Social Security. And they're going to act like it was some sort of force of nature that made it happen, right? It's just, you know, the system screwed up. No, it's because they themselves prevented themselves from doing anything about it. And I said, you know, in a year from now, you are going to see articles talking about how Social Security is in a crisis, the disability fund, all this kind of stuff. And they're not going to point out that this was a train wreck that the Republicans set into motion on their first day of the of this last Congress as a time bomb waiting for the election. And sure enough, Robert Pair, to his credit, he actually notes these changes. Republicans, however, want more significant changes to improve the program's finances. If I was Robert Pair, I would have said that they say will improve the program's finances. These changes could include reductions in disability benefits, restrictions on eligibility. And then he says in January, Republicans adopted a new rule in the House that could block a direct reallocation of money at the expense of the trust fund that provides benefits for retirees. He says it kind of wonky. I would have made it the first sentence. Republican time bomb, you know, about to explode. Instead, the first sentence of the article is 11 million people face a deep, abrupt cut in disability insurance benefits in late 2016 if Congress fails to replenish Social Security's Disability Trust Fund, which is running out of money, the Obama administration said on Wednesday. This is the Republican war against Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and elderly people. Yeah, there's a lot more I want to get into. I've got what I think is an absolutely brilliant insight, and maybe I'm just crazy. I'd love to get your thoughts on it, on the role of women in our society and how men have been manipulating this forever, and what 1961 and 1973 and today have in common and in mirror image. We will get to that next hour. Bernie Sanders has blasted MSNBC and Comcast for canceling Ed Schultz's show. I wanted to talk a little bit about that. Ed is, in my opinion, the last true voice for American working people on MSNBC. He's the only guy on MSNBC who is willing to talk about our trade issues and how stupid they are. He's literally the only guy. He's the only one who's willing to bring labor on regularly and talk about labor issues. He's the only one who's been willing to talk about net neutrality. These are subjects that I you know, just from watching a lot of MSNBC, I have to conclude that the other hosts are not allowed to talk about these, and now they're going to fire him or lay him off, or he's leaving, or whatever. I don't know. I don't want to represent it. I haven't had any conversation with Ed about this at all, but I'm reading this press release from Bernie. I'm going to get into that in the next hour because I think that Roger Ailes is a programming genius, and I think the people at MSNBC are programming idiots. But, you know, I guess it depends on what your goals are. Anyhow, it's Anything Goes Friday, Anything Goes Summer. We'll pick up your calls here. Neil in Tallahassee, Florida. Hey, Neil, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to talk. I was originally going to talk about holding police accountable, but you've kind of covered that a lot today. So I kind of wanted to ask your opinions on two things that come up. One comes from Congressman Alan Grayson, who's running for Rubio's blank seat coming up. And apparently the DNC has already backed his opponent, can't remember his name, and he went on a tirade against the Democrats saying, well, they do this because they're losers. They just back establishment people because right. That's all they can do because they're meek. And right. I thought it was really interesting because at the same time, we see former Representative Barney Frank come out and tell progressives that what they're doing by supporting Sanders is actually hurting Clinton's presidency,
right.
Sort of fall into line sort of thing. And it's very hypocritical what they're doing in this sort of sense in my mind. And I just wanted your thoughts.
Well, I think this actually ties in with the Ed Schultz thing. In as I keep saying to everybody, in Washington, D.C., it doesn't matter if you're left or right. It doesn't matter if you're Republican or Democrat. It matters on the thing that matters, the thing that is consequential, the thing that determines whether you get invited to the White House and whether you get invited to the cocktail parties in this town and whether you get covered in the press and whether your name shows up and whether you show up on television regularly is, are you an insider or are you an outsider? And so, you know, what you're describing, I think, are insider-outsider things. Alan Grayson is an outsider. And the Democratic Party doesn't want an outsider in the Senate. They've already got one. That's Bernie Sanders. That's enough. And that's and I think that Ed Schultz was an outsider. He was not towing the insider's conventional wisdom. The insider's conventional wisdom is that trade deals are wonderful. Corporations should run the world. Net neutrality is a silly idea. Free trade is something that's of course, you know, it's a force of nature. It's got to be. And you know, I think he's getting bumped for that. And what you're describing, I believe, Neil, can all be put in that frame of, you know, outsiders being trashed by insiders. And it's the big thing that concerns me is that the insider media, the New York Times, great piece over at Alternet about, you know, thank you, Neil, for the call, about why is the New York Times ignoring the Sanders surge, the Sanders anything. Well, it's because the New York Times is the ultimate insider publication. Sanders is the outsider. So, and Fox News, by the way, Roger Ailes made this brilliant programming decision to program as an outsider to outsiders.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And MSNBC now is moving in the direction of programming more and more with insiders, Chuck Todd, Brian Williams, two insiders. Welcome back. Johnny in Lamarck, Texas. Hey, Johnny, what's up? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Thank you for doing what you do. Hey, I know we talked about this before, and I don't expect you to remember each and every call over each and every week and month that passes by, but Rachel Maddow and Hayes, they both have talked about net neutrality, and Schultz's specialty is labor issues.
Yeah.
So they each have their own little niche within the evening MSNBC. But I think
although the net neutrality riffs by Chris Hayes and Rachel Maddow were by way of noting the news, not by way of generating activist behavior, at least in my opinion. And Ed Schultz has never backed away from encouraging people to be activists on issues.
Well, I will partially agree with you in that they've moved him from the evening to the early afternoon. So that's troubling. But he's been on there for quite a while now, and I don't see him leaving unless MSNBC's Morning Joe guy gets total carte blanche over who gets to be the guest on the evening shows.
It's not him. It's a new guy. I think his name is Andy Lack, who is used to be a vice president with NBC, and now he's basically coming in. And I don't know if he's Phil Griffin's boss or if he's just, you know, shaking things up or what. I'm not privy to the inside politics of NBC and frankly not all that interested in it. But apparently he's the force behind this, and what they're trying to do is their ratings are in the toilet. And I think that their ratings are in the toilet because they are basically an insider network, and nobody's interested. You know, the progressive base is not interested in the insider perspective. The progressive base would like the outsider perspective, which I think is frankly Ed Schultz. And so, you know, they got to get rid of him and replace it. And so what they're going to do is they're going to go up against the other insider network, CNN. And so they're going to go more, quote, hard news. They're going to be more like Wolf Blitzer. And there's a bias to hard news, too. You know, it's just, you know, what stories do you pick?
Hard news. They're political news commentary.
Yeah, right.
That's their field, and that's what they're good at. And I hope that that's not interrupted in any way. I hope you're wrong about that. But I called about
I guarantee you I'm not. Look to see changes next month.
Stephanie Miller's guest made a mention that a lot of military and cops, they around Christmas time, they like to give out toys to tots as part of a positive PR spin. And that got me to thinking, do you recall back in the early years of the Iraq War when Amy Goodman reported on these military soldiers over in Iraq who slapped the hands of these Iraqi men holding hands in public. Do you recall that?
I don't.
Yeah, that stuck out of my mind, and that goes to show how the white male superiority complex infiltrates every part
well,
of society,
including
the military.
Well, no, that's more of my culture versus your culture.
You have a Texas trooper who, by the way, a lot of those guys are recruited from the military. They've got this superior attitude, especially towards people of color. They're going to tell them how to live by way of all kinds of tiny suggestions, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing.
Yeah, Michelle Alexander refers to these as microaggressions. That, you know, you just get all these little. But, you know, I've spent a fair amount of time in the Middle East, and men holding hands is a very, very common thing, and they're not gay. They're just friends. This is. But I don't recall a news story about our soldiers slapping them, but I believe you, Johnny. Interesting. And, yeah, and I think that there is this white male superiority. This Joe Madison calls it, you know, white supremacy. And it's an infection in our culture. Thank you, Johnny, for the call. We'll be back. It's 10 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Joe in Coos Bay, Oregon, listening on KBBR. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Hey, Tom. What a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
I just wanted to go a little further into your thinking about the supposed Sandra Bland suicide.
Right.
In the state of Texas, she was going to go to work for Prairie View A&M.
Mm-hmm. The university,
and,
right.
Yeah, so she had to be drug tested.
Are you sure
of that? Job. Oh yeah, that's a prerequisite.
So you think that now was she driving? She was not driving down to apply for the job. She was driving down to accept the job, right?
Yeah. Well, she had the job.
She had the job. So she had.
She was going down to set up, you know, her apartment, find a place to live.
Right.
She was starting her new job.
So you're saying that she had previously been drug tested. Do you know when? Because the question is, was she given a large dose of pot in jail, and did that cause her to become, you know, that combined with this anti-epilepsy drug that she was taking, which has as one of its principal side effects suicidal thoughts.
Here's what I do know.
Okay.
Prairie View A&M, like any other state institution, has a requirement for all employees that are potential employees, and that is that they will be drug screened and they will pass a drug test.
Right.
And then, upon doing that, they can be offered the job.
Okay.
You know, and the thing is that socially, where this woman came from, a good black family in Illinois, church-going people, very clean, very well-spoken people, that really got that cop, excuse the French, pissed.
Be careful what you say in the air, Joe.
Well,
okay.
What he did to her
was
horrible.
Yes.
And what
he terrorized her.
In her. Yeah. And what we saw in her mugshot was a bloody eye, a swollen right cheek. She was a mess. The mugshot that the Texas police released was photoshopped.
Really? How do you know?
I saw it online. I saw her mugshot. What is it? Media Underground released it.
Huh.
I'm 72. I'm just getting into all these things. I spent 41 years in radio and TV, and I find myself focused on the little guy, and I work with people who are dying and read to them and talk to them, and I listen to people like you. And I hope and pray that our youth, our young people, wake up
they are
and realize what really is at risk.
They are, Joe. Look at the Occupy movement. Look at the profile of the crowds that are showing up for Bernie. There's a lot of boomers, but there's a hell of a lot of young people. Yeah. It's
at any rate, I do not think I think your food was laced, and you know how that can be done. Tasty little bit of Dairy Queen ice cream in jail.
Yeah.
And then she becomes paranoid because she's not been taking it. Furthermore, she's epileptic.
Right.
And she's denied her epilepsy medicine. You got a horrible cocktail.
Yeah. And these are the things that we don't know. Keila, let's just make it very clear. This is not even speculation. This is asking the question. If there was a high level of marijuana in her blood 3 days after she'd been arrested, how did she get that pot while she was all alone in a jail cell for 3 days? Did somebody come in and go out during those 3 days? Did a guard put it in there? Or was she given it unwittingly? And did it interact with this anti-epilepsy drug that she was taking, which has as a principal side effect suicide? There's all kinds of questions here that are not being answered. Joe, thanks a lot for the call, and good on you for everything you're doing. Anita in Payson, Utah. Hey, Anita, you used to work as a nurse in a jail?
Yes, I did.
Tell us your, and you have some thoughts on Sandra Bland.
I do.
Go for it.
I believe because of the way the officer slammed her head on the ground and her history of epilepsy and not getting her medication for the 3 days, that she died of a seizure.
Well, we don't know that she was not given her medication. I've not seen an affirmative statement saying that she was or was not. It was just among her, that bottle of Keppra was listed among her personal effects. Now, whether they kept it from her or not, I don't know.
Well, from my experience, yes, they would have.
So even an anti-seizure medication for an epileptic?
Yes, because we didn't use any medication that was brought in from the outside because you don't know if it's tainted or not.
Oh, in other words, it might be a bottle of Keppra, but it's actually filled with oxycodone.
Yeah, something else. You don't know. And so we had to verify with their doctor everything that they took. And sometimes it would take 2 or 3 days to verify what they were taking and to get the dosage to them.
Now, there's a huge warning on the Keppra labeling information that says, do not suddenly stop taking this drug. And,
right.
You know, and some of the things that can happen if you suddenly stop taking it is, number one, an increase in seizures. And number two and three, you know, agitation, anxiety, and suicidal thoughts.
Yes. I don't believe she killed herself. I think she died in custody, and they're trying to cover it up. For whatever reason, she died in custody.
Yeah.
When you die from a seizure, it's not generally from the seizure. It's from aspirating into
But that would show in an autopsy, wouldn't it, rather than just asphyxiation?
It should, yes.
Yeah. So I guess we'll find out when the Chicago authorities, her body has been taken to Chicago. The Texas authorities said, we want the body back. We want to do another autopsy. And the family saying, no, thank you very much. We're going to keep the body here in Chicago, and we're gonna find out what the hell's going on here.
I don't blame them. I've seen this behavior over and over again where they try to cover things up. And
from the time that you worked as a nurse in jail?
Yeah.
That's so unfortunate. That's so unfortunate. Anita, thank you for the call, and thank you for watching the show on live stream. We'll be back with more of Anything Goes Friday. Right after the news here at the top of the hour. Stick around. Oh, and I've got as I said, there is so much more in the news that I want to get to. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Okay, if you look at the arresting document, the booking sheet, Waller County Sheriff's Office, 701 Calvert, Hempstead, Texas, and there's a phone number that I'm not going to do Donald Trump and read on the air. Bland, Sandra Annette, personal items, sandals, multicolored dress, black bra, blue underwear, circle band, robe belt, hairpin, piercing below belt, Texas driver's license, Texas ID, Illinois driver's license. This was her property. End of list. And yet it says that she's taking Keppra. They asked her, do you have a medical condition? She said, yes, epilepsy. They said, do you take a drug for it? She said, yes, Keppra. But she apparently didn't have it with her. Maybe it's one of these things you take once a day and it was at home. Or maybe it was in her car. But she didn't have it on her body when they dragged her off to jail. So, again, we don't know, but it would seem, and the arresting officer's name was Brian Encinia, E-N-C-I-N-I-A. It would seem that she went 3 days in jail without the drug that she was supposed to be taking for her epilepsy. Now, here's the other question is, where's the cell phone? I keep asking this. And David near Yosemite makes this point. He says, watching the video, and now I haven't, apparently I missed this. Watching the video, there's a point where the officer tells her to put her phone down, and she drops it in the trunk. I didn't see that. Yeah, or maybe on the trunk. Later, while the tow truck operator is preparing to tow her car, the female officer picks up something from the trunk. Oh, yeah, it says she drops it on the trunk, not in the trunk. The female officer picks up something from the trunk, turns toward the dash cam, and tucks something behind her back, looking like a guilty shoplifter. So, I don't know, Jim, if you can pull up that video and take a look at it. And then the Sandra Bland mugshot. Oh, yeah, here's the piece. Anyway, a lot going on here. Apropos of Sandra Bland and Hillary Clinton, for that matter, and women in general, I had this epiphany. Louise and I were sitting in bed talking. It was 11 o'clock night before last. We were about to go to sleep, and it just suddenly hit me. And she said, that's a good thought. Write that down. So I sent an email to myself so I wouldn't forget. And here's what I wrote. And I remember all this because this all happened in my lifetime. I remember back in the early 70s when I started my first business. Actually, it was the late 60s. The first business that we started was the electronics trade, a TV repair shop in East Lansing, Michigan. Started that, I think, in 68 or 69 when I was 17 or 18 years old. And, in fact, Louise was our bookkeeper. This was before we got married. And we were dating at the time, though. And, in fact, my dad taught her how to do double-entry bookkeeping. And if you wanted to hire somebody, if you wanted a place of help wanted to add the paper, you'd call up that paper and say, I want a place of help wanted. And they say, do you want it under men wanted or women wanted? Because they were two separate parts of the newspaper, two separate parts of the help wanted ads. Women did not have anything close to equality in the United States in the early 70s, late 60s. Or, you know, any time before that. I mean, they'd only gotten the vote in 1920. So, or 1919, what it was 1920, the 19th Amendment. So, what happened? What suddenly hit me was, and this was just kind of a recollection of events, 1961, if my memory serves me right, and it might have been 60, but I'm pretty sure it was 61, the birth control was a pill, was approved by the FDA for over-the-counter or for prescription sale, but for sale. It was illegal prior to that. Over the next 4 or 5 years, there was the Loving versus Connecticut case, as I recall. I think that was 64, 65, 66. It was right around then in the mid-60s, which said that interracial marriage was no longer a crime. This was a Supreme Court case. And there was the Griswold versus Connecticut case, which I think was 64 or 65 also, which said that at that point in time in Connecticut, a married couple could go to jail if a police officer broke into their bedroom and found condoms. Owning birth control was illegal in Connecticut, even for married couples, as late as the mid-60s. And this went all the way to the Supreme Court, Griswold v. Connecticut. If my memory serves me right, Shane, you would know better than me. He's nodding his head. Okay. And it said it's legal for people to have birth control. Okay. Keep in mind, this is just a few years after the birth control pill was introduced as a safe legal form of preventing pregnancy. And then in 1973, we had Roe v. Wade, which legalized abortion nationwide. So in this very, very narrow, and while the birth control pill was made widely available or was legalized in 61, it wasn't really until 65, 66 that it really gained acceptance, that women figured out that it wasn't going to cause cancer, it wasn't going to kill them, and it really did work. And so there was this period from the early mid-60s until the early mid-70s where women got absolute control over their bodies, which they had not had before. Their bodies had been subjected largely to the whims of men by laws that prevented them from having access to birth control, by the fact that men very often were dictating times of sex, that if the husband did not want to follow the rhythm method. There were functionally no laws back then that said that, you know, raping your wife was considered rape. It was simply considered part of marriage. So if a woman says, hey, you know, it's the wrong time of the month, I'm sorry, we're using the rhythm method because birth control is illegal here in Connecticut, and the guy says, I'm horny anyway, roll over. You know, I mean, that was life for women. And then by the mid-70s, women had absolute control over their reproduction, their bodies. And what happened? Women started showing up in the workforce. Women started showing up in Congress. Women started showing up in state legislatures. Women started showing up in, you know, climbing the corporate ladders. Women started showing up in all these, quote, non-traditional. The newspaper stopped running women's help wanted women, help wanted men. In other words, women achieved relative. Now, obviously, we're not to equality even now. But women achieved power because they got control of their bodies. So what are the white conservative men doing now? They're trying to make it harder for women to get birth control. They're trying to make birth control more expensive. Oh, let's make it an over-the-counter drug. Well, that means your health insurance company won't pay for it anymore. Oh, let's say that your employer can refuse to cover the cost. They're literally trying to do away with birth control. There are some places where they're even talking about criminalizing birth control. They've already criminalized in some states some types of birth control, like the morning after pill. And they're criminalizing abortion and making it harder and harder and harder to even find a place to get an abortion. Take away the power of reproductive decision making from women and you strip them of their power. You strip them of their ability to fully interact as equals in society with men. This is the war on women. You know, Democrats use this phrase, the war on women, and I think a lot of people don't understand what they're talking about. This is the war on women. It's a war on women's rights. And the reason I said this also applies to Hillary Clinton is this war on women being waged by conservative men is deeply rooted in both fear of women and hatred of women and misogyny. And it's going to make it even more of a challenge for a woman to gain the White House. Now, I say that not by way of saying, therefore, Hillary shouldn't be our nominee. If Hillary's our nominee, I am going to work my butt off to get her elected, and I think it would be an amazing and wonderful and extraordinary thing to have a woman in the White House. It would be a first. It would be important. It's an important first step. But I'm telling you, the conservatives are doing everything they can, not just to stop Hillary, but to stop every woman in America.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Oh, and by the way, did you notice that Sandra Bland is a woman? There is a war on women going on in this country. Especially women of color. Welcome back. Let's see here. Corky in Hilton, New York. Hey, Corky, what's on your mind? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. Corky? Corky has been on hold long enough that I think he got, what do you call it, Comcasted, yeah. Bob in Bullhead City, Arizona. Bob, can you hear me? Oh, no. Sherry. By the way, if you hear me call your name and you try and talk and I can't hear you, just call us back. You know, we'll get another line and hopefully it'll work. Sherry in Makawaho, Hawaii. Sherry, can you hear me?
I can. Can
Great.
You hear me?
I can. You are on the air.
And it's Makawao, like Maui Waui.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Uh-huh. We're here out in Maui, and you may remember that we passed some legislation requiring the testing of GMO farming practices just for health and environmental effects before they could continue to use glyphosate in rampant amounts here.
Right.
We passed that, but now the county government is vacating their responsibilities to take these people to court or enforce it in any way. And so being tied up in court along with Kauai and the Big Island here, I had been hoping that the billions of dollars of lawsuits that are being brought against Monsanto and these large companies, combined with people like me, moms and citizens in any place that these people try to go, would eventually prevail. But now I'm seeing what's happening in with Vermonters in their labeling law, and I think Denton, Texas was banning fracking, and all of these different things that are coming down. I'm worried that the effects of the TPP and I'm wondering about this DARC Act that's slithering its way through the halls of Congress. What's your opinion? Is there going to be anything left for us to defend ourselves? And
not if Monsanto has any say over it. I'm serious.
I'm serious too. We met with Dr. Stephanie Seneff last night, and she had some amazing new evidence about this glyphosate and its effects on. She's been studying the effects on children and autism.
Right.
And last night she said that she's got new evidence that it's just as bad for the elderly. Well, it's bad for everybody because it's poison, but that autism and Alzheimer's, there's a connection there.
Right.
And
well, that was what this worm study indicated, was that both were the consequences of inflammation in the brain, and inflammation was an overactive immune system, and you can downregulate the immune system with drugs like Humira or by having parasites.
Yeah, so we're fighting it here, and I'm appealing to anybody who has ever been to Maui or would like to come to Maui or likes whales or girls in bikinis, if they could donate to our fund.
What's the website, Sherry?
It's Maui GMO Moratorium News.org.
Maui GMO Moratorium News.org, right?
Yes, thank you.
Cool. Thank you, Sherry. I hope it gets you some good reactions. Thank you. 20 minutes past the hour. Okay, Sandra Bland mugshot, 5 fast facts you need to know. And thank you to our executive producer, Sean Taylor, for forwarding this to us. It's from Heavy.com. 1, a rumor has spread that Bland was already dead when the photo was taken. Why does she look at her hair? Oh, wow, this is I'm going to have to read this before I talk about it on the air. It was just handed to me, and so we will get back to that. Anyway, Corky in Hilton, New York. Hey, Corky, Medicare?
Yeah, you just reported about a 20% cut they wanted to take.
From Social Security disability recipients, yes.
Yes. Did you hear anywhere, I listened to it was a flash, about the world economics, in order for America to compete, the workers are going to have to take a 20% pay cut across the board.
I saw that a couple of weeks ago, yeah. I don't know what the source of it was, but... I mean, we've already basically taken a 50% pay cut over the last 40 years.
Yes. Well, there's that 20% number again.
Yeah.
When they start repeating the same number, look out.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't disagree with you. I don't disagree with you. Thank you very much, Corky. Great to hear from you. Bob in Bullhead City, Arizona. Hey, Bob, you want to talk about Sandra Bland and pot?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yep.
All right. Good, sir. Yeah, I would. I'm very experienced with it, and I've done some studies on it. And marijuana is a fat-soluble the THC that is derived from it is a fat soluble, so it will hang in your system longer than a non-water soluble, or I should say non-fat soluble.
Right, or lipid soluble, as they say in science. Yeah.
Yeah. So now it would depend on how Ms. Bland used marijuana, how often, and at what percentage of THC as well.
Right.
So,
but the assistant district attorney said that the level in her blood was high, and that they could not, and that they didn't know if she had taken it before she was stopped or if she had gotten it in jail. And, you know, after 3 days, I mean, I know that, you know, pot is fat soluble, and that's a real problem for people that have to be drug tested because it can persist in your body for up to a month and be detectable. But the levels drop off pretty dramatically in the first couple of days, don't they?
Yes, as far as being high. But however, there is that cannabinoid that clings to fat, and it would depend on really at sometimes how much fat you actually have in your system. But after 3 days is what you have. A person that hasn't had marijuana, you've got a cranky person, you know. And as far as epilepsy and marijuana, there are studies that show that marijuana has helped chronic epilepsy greatly.
Oh, yeah, that's. I mean, there are families moving to Colorado because their children are epileptic, and the CBD in the types of pot. The non-get you high types of pot are the only thing that control their epilepsy. No, you're absolutely right. But I'm, you know, the only medical, from what little I know about this, and I'm a fairly well-informed layman, it occurs to me that probably the only two ways she could have really high levels of pot in her bloodstream after being in jail for 3 days would be, one, if somebody slipped her a Mickey or offered her a joint. In other words, number one, she got the pot in jail. And I'm wondering why she turned down breakfast, why they took it to her, you know, when they took it to her. Was it because the night before they had laced her food with something that made her crazy? That's pure speculation on my part, and I could be totally wrong. But that could account for a high level of THC in her blood, or if she had lost a lot of weight over those 3 days. But the problem with that is that she was not a large woman to begin with. She didn't have that much fat to lose. So if she was losing weight over those 3 days because she was upset and not eating or something like that, I don't think that she would be dissolving enough fat to liberate enough fat-soluble THC that you would see a high enough level of THC that it would be associated with recent usage.
You are dead spot on. That is exactly right, and that is my point. So, yeah, something had to take place. I don't know what it was either, sir. But people need to know that that what they're trying to do is absolutely wrong, and I hope that this autopsy will show something that will prove the truth. And I appreciate your time, and I love your show, and thank you to your staff and everybody.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your kind words, Bob. It's appreciated. And thanks for calling in. Over in our chat room, let's see here. When I was talking about Maureen Dowd, taking that pot chocolate bar and eating a massive overdose of it and spending the whole night hallucinating and wildly paranoid in her bed. Manicler in our chat room says, in other words, normal for Mrs. Dowd, right, Tom? No, not really. I mean, you know, Maureen Dowd can be amazingly snarky, although she wrote a very nice piece a couple days ago about Barack Obama. And she spent, you know, much of his presidency basically picking on Barry, as it were. So I have a feeling that Maureen Dowd is one of these very, very, very complex people. But in any case, my point is, what the hell's going on here? Everything about this case raises more questions than it answers. And the biggest question, of course, is why is this officer not in jail for terrorism? We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Officer Encinia, I guess is his name. You should not be able to terrorize average American citizens who have done nothing wrong. You should not be able to do it. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It's a great story in today's New York Times. Bernie Sanders is 100% Brooklyn roots, show beyond his accent. It is by Jason Horowitz. And he writes, Ivor Williams stood on his porch and stared suspiciously at the visitor who was pointing to the attic of his pink and shingled house near Brooklyn College. I used to live here, Steve Slavin explained, to no noticeable reaction from Mr. Williams. Then he uttered the magic words, with Bernie Sanders. Bernie? Mr. Williams, a 78-year-old immigrant from Guyana, explained. I was just watching Bernie on TV. Hillary Rodham Clinton may be a former senator from New York who located her campaign headquarters in Brooklyn Heights, but all it takes to know who really represents Brooklyn in the race for the Democratic nomination is for Mr. Sanders to open his mouth and utter a few syllables. Yeah. I love it. He puts an R at the end of everything. You know, it's like the Brooklyn variation of Teddy Kennedy. Anyhow, new sales homes have dropped 6.8% in June. This along with the commodity crash. But, you know, I'm going to get into this in the next hour. That and the story about pot healing broken bones. Oh, there is no. Oh, that's right. You're going to be. Shano and Danielle are going to be doing the next hour because I've got to go do a TV show. So, and you guys have other plans, right? So, I don't know. I'll leave these for you here, and you can use them if you want. Cynthia in Chicago. Hey, Cynthia, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. I want to sort of step back and take a more 1,000-foot view of the police brutality and terrorism. It's costing our country billions and billions of taxpayer dollars.
You're right.
When it's so cheap to do the right thing. So, I think, and this may have been mentioned at some point on your show, I think police officers, like doctors and nurses, should have liability insurance, and the department should carry an additional umbrella policy for protecting these police officers. And none of this should be supplemented by the taxpayer.
I agree. And then what will happen is when you get cops like this officer who beat up and let's just call it that, or terrorized and assaulted Sandra Bland,
right.
his malpractice insurance rates will go from $100 a year to $1,000 a month, you know? And at that point,
that'll end quickly.
Yeah. And at that, just like if you get in two car accidents in a row, you know? And
right.
At that point, you may say, okay, you know, my insurance is now costing me $3,000 a year. I don't think I'm going to drive anymore. And the police department may say, you know, it's costing us a fortune to keep this guy's malpractice insurance, or he's paying it out of his pocket and he can no longer afford it. So, hey, quit being a cop and go be a bus driver or something.
Right.
Yell at people
right.
when you get on the bus.
Exactly. And the one other issue, Black Girl Dangerous wrote a wonderful article this week about not discounting Sandra Bland's suicide, that we can, she wants people to hold multiple truths and that people can commit suicide as an act against state-sanctioned violence.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can indict the system. And she thinks we need to hold both to sort of accept, you know, people dealing with the mental illness issues and white supremacy. So I encourage your listeners to read that, and
yeah.
Just want to say, great show. Always love the
thank
content,
you,
all of it, and just learn so much. So thank you.
Thank you. You know, I absolutely agree with that premise, and this is why I mentioned I had once thought about suicide when I was much, much younger, and that it's in fact, I even attempted it once when I was a teenager. Badly, and it was just to get attention in retrospect, but, you know, it's part of, but I think that if a police department is going to brutalize a young person, she's 28, it's a young person, or anybody for that matter, I mean, you could be a 70-year-old. If a police department is going to brutalize somebody for no good reason and then put them in jail and lock them up in essentially solitary confinement for 3 days, they have responsibility for that person. I mean, I saw, I don't know if it was the lawyer for Sandra Bland or a spokesperson for their family or whatever, but he was saying, this was on, I think, on CNN a day or two ago, he was saying, you know, if you had a babysitter and, you know, she beat up the kids and one of the kids died or went off and committed suicide in his bedroom and you know, while she was babysitting, would you want that same babysitter to babysit your kids? I mean, it's like, which is, I thought was a fairly pedestrian analogy that avoided words like terrorism and things, but there, you know, there is a level of responsibility that the police department has here for somebody in their custody. Beyond the fact that she never should have been in custody, which is, I think, the really important part is that, you know, she was the victim of police, of state-sanctioned terrorism. And we need to start calling it that. You think so, Cynthia?
I completely agree with you.
Yeah.
100% or yeah. 1,000%.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's entirely possible that she committed suicide. I think that by absolutely saying that's not possible, we set aside the possibility of saying this is state brutality that is so severe that it has driven a person to kill themselves. I mean, consider the fact that in Iraq, for 7,300 years, Iraq had a civilization. The Epic of Gilgamesh, the oldest recorded story in Western civilization, took place in Iraq 7,300 years ago. 7,000 years, oldest civilization in history. Never once had there been a suicide bomber. Never once. Until we invaded and turned that country into absolute hell. And then young people were feeling so much despair. So you know, the destruction was so complete and so much outrage that that basically the only way they could protest was to kill themselves. And in that context, suicide is a political act. And it may well be that, you know, Sandra Bland was doing that. It could have been despair. It could have been, you know, rage against the system. It could have been the fact that she was on a drug for her epilepsy, Keppra, that has as a side effect suicidal ideation and suicidal thinking. And it gets even worse the first couple of days when it's taken away from you, and it was not listed among her possessions when she was put in jail, so it was not available to her. I mean, there's all kinds of things that we should be considering, and I think, you know, her committing suicide is as horrible as an outcome as her being killed. Well, it's probably less horrible than her being killed in jail, but by constantly thinking, oh, it's got to be murder. We make a mistake, if that makes sense. And is that consistent with the article you read, Cynthia?
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Okay.
And, you know, my father had an incident. He's in his 70s several years ago. He was losing weight. He wasn't eating. He was on all this medication. We thought it was dementia-related. He had a psychotic episode.
Mm-hmm.
And it was his medicine and the fact that he wasn't eating. And when he had the brain scans, everything came back okay, and it equally went away just that quickly. But for a week, he was sort of quote unquote out of his mind,
right.
And it was strange. So the you know not having medication or too much medication can affect you.
Yeah, absolutely, and especially if you're in a jail cell. I mean, you know, jail cells cause. You're locked up. It's like being a caged animal. It's a total freak out. I tell you from experience. Cynthia, thank you for the call. Thank you very much. Larry in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Larry, what's up?
Hello, Tom. With Sandra Bland, we've all seen the video, and we understand what's going on there.
By the way, if I may interrupt you, Larry, Jim just brought me over the video and showed me the spot where the female police officer puts what appears to be Sandra Bland's cell phone on the back, on top of the trunk of the car, and then goes into the car and then comes out of the car, and then it looks like she picks it up and slips it into her pocket. But I can't say for certain because the resolution isn't good enough.
I saw that too, and I couldn't tell one way or the other.
The cell phone was not listed among her possessions. Where the hell is her cell phone?
True. But my question is, she was in a cell, and I believe she was by herself. Why was there a plastic bag in there?
Well, apparently it was a trash can liner.
Big pardon?
Apparently it was a trash can liner because when they took the media into that same jail cell a couple days later, that waste basket on the floor. And I don't know if the waste basket was bolted down or not. It probably should have been, but there was a plastic trash bag in it again. You know, so they had replaced the trash bag apparently.
But most jails don't even allow sheets in their jails anymore because of hanging.
Well,
why would they allow a plastic bag in there? That's even worse than a sheet.
Yeah, and this was a jail that had a guy a couple of years earlier hang himself with a rope. So apparently there was no rope in there. But, it raises a lot of questions. But I think the biggest question and the place that we should be focusing our attention is Officer Ancinia and his behavior, because it's too consistent with, too characteristic of the behavior of too many police officers across the United States. I don't think it's even a majority of cops, but the problem is that the majority of cops are not reporting the people who behave like Officer Insignia, who basically terrorize people who are without power, in this case a young African-American woman. And that is, in my opinion, that's a crime, what he did, the way he terrorized her. He might have, you know, according to the Supreme Court, it was legal. A cop can order you out of your car. If you refuse to get out of your car, they can drag you out of your car. And beware of people who tell you that you have the right to stay in your car. You don't, according to the Supreme Court. So, you know, arguably he was in the right, but legally. But that makes it no less terrorism in my mind. Larry, thank you for the call. And that's where I think our attention should be focused. We have police in this country now who are behaving like an occupying military force, and like on a one-on-one level, or in the case of that guy with the Occupy protesters who was spraying pepper in their eyes, police who are acting like terrorists.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And the NRA isn't helping any by making sure that everybody has a gun, so every time a cop walks up to a stopped car, they're frightened. We'll be back. Welcome back. Antone in Spokane, Washington. Hey, Antone. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's on your mind today?
Hi. I just want to say that what they're saying, like right now, you're talking about the issues and why she committed suicide and all that stuff. That takes the focus away from the cop that caused the whole incident in the first place by pulling her over. It wasn't her. She has every right to say what she said.
Yep.
And for the officer to respond the way that he did, and now you're talking about the suicide, you're talking about the trash bags, you're talking about everything else, and here's the officer clear. Like what he did was right. We need to get that focus and put it back on the officer, and what he did is wrong.
I think that was the last thing I just said, Antone.
Of the policy? Okay, but I just want to point that out because I sit here and I've watched and I heard you, what you said.
Yeah.
I just want to point that out.
Yeah, I agree with
you. As far as, okay?
Okay, thank you very much for the call. Michelle in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hey, Michelle, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I want to address something as a white person that I've grown up with that I refer to as racism light, and that there's no such thing. And the Sandra Bland case absolutely proves it.
Okay.
Racism light is, and I've heard family members and white people that I've been around, try to thread this needle. And I think this was exactly what Fox so-called news keys in on. Thread a needle between the so-called good kind of black people or the right kind of black people and the wrong kind of black people.
Right.
And what racist white is, the right kind of black people are okay. I don't have a problem with all black people. I only have a problem with the wrong kind of black people. That means, go through the stereotypes. A black person who has the right kind would be a black person who has an education, who's not on welfare, so on and so forth. I don't need to list it.
Who's,
we're all
who's
aware of it.
Speaks in Midwestern English.
That helps, too, or Northern, absolutely, that helps, too. And that's the right kind of black person. Then there's the wrong kind of black person, and racist light tries to thread that needle and draw that distinction, and that is such a bogus argument. In the Sandra Bland case, I mean, it just breaks my heart that this is case in point that you are either racist or you are not. You cannot thread this needle. Right. I've also grown up with comments like, white people can be N-words too. That doesn't work either.
Yeah.
So I'm just putting it out there, any white people that think that they're threading this needle and that this is acceptable, it is not. And black people, if you're not paranoid, it exists. I hear it every day.
Yeah. I don't hear it every day, but I've heard it throughout my life. I know what you're talking about, Michelle. And I think you're right. Were you saying racism light with an L or racism white with a W?
No, racism light, like L-I-T-E.
Aha. Okay. With an L. Got it. I think that's a brilliant analysis, Michelle. Thank you very much for the call, and thanks for making it. And you're absolutely right. That's the coin of the realm for Fox so-called news and right-wing hate radio. We'll be back. It's Talk Media for the Sane Among Us, the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome back. And let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and free-don.org. Victoria Jones on the line with us. Happy Friday, Victoria.
And to you too, Tom.
Thank you. What's going on in the world?
Well, a troubling picture is emerging of John Russell Hauser, the man who shot up, allegedly, but it seems pretty definitively, a Louisiana movie theater last night. He was armed with a semi-automatic 40-caliber handgun, had one additional magazine.
Oh, wow. I don't know if you know much about guns, but a 40-caliber is about as...
Yeah.
That shoots a big bullet that does a lot of damage, and it's got a hell of a kick. My brother owns one. I've shot them. That's like a cannon.
Yeah, it's a big gun. Well, the Lafayette Police Chief Jim Kraft is saying they found at least 13 shell casings inside the theater that was showing Trainwreck. Says he opened fire, then apparently tried to leave the theater, dropped a magazine in the lobby, reloaded, then returned to the theater room, fired one shot, killing himself. They're investigating whether the gun was bought legally and whether it was purchased by the gunman, John Hauser. Now, what would be interesting about this, among other things, is that at one point, a few years ago, back in 2008, court documents say family members of the shooter petitioned the probate court to have him involuntarily committed because he was a danger to himself and others. Now, this was in Georgia. A judge issued the order, and John Hauser was taken to a hospital in Columbus. While he was at the Carroll County Sheriff's Office awaiting transfer to the hospital, Hauser said to his wife that once he got out of the hospital, he would continue his erratic as well as threatening behavior to try to stop his daughter's wedding. Now, he had been very threatening, and his wife and other family members had asked for a temporary protective order in 2008. And at one point, in fact, this filing asking for the temporary protective order that said he had a history of mental health issues, it said that the wife had become so worried about his volatile mental state that she has removed all guns and all weapons from their marital residence. And the protective order was at least temporarily granted. So it would be interesting if he could, in fact, buy a weapon legally under those circumstances.
Yes. Okay. We will, you know, watch this space.
We'll watch this one. And police are also looking at online postings they believe to have been written by him. He was apparently a member of the Tea Party Nation.
Wonderful.
So there we are.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, in other news, an internal government...
Why doesn't the headline say Tea Party or murders two people in theater?
Why is it that you have to scan drugs to find this story?
I mean, if he had been Muslim, it would have said Muslim activist murders two people in theater. If he had been black, it would have been, you know, African-American murders two people in theater. He's a white guy. It's just who's a member of the Tea Party. It just says, you know, man kills two people in theater.
Numerous talk show hosts have asked me that question today, but it's very interesting. Very interesting indeed. This is a phenomenon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyhow, I interrupted you. You were continuing on.
The Wall Street Journal, as you know, the New York Times reported today that two inspectors general are saying that they're recommending a criminal probe.
Are these Bush appointees?
I do not know. That has not been reported. But they are recommending a criminal probe into possible misuse of Hillary Clinton's email server. Right. Now, the Wall Street Journal is reporting today that an internal government review found that she sent, Hillary Clinton did, at least four emails from her personal account containing classified information during her time heading the State Department. Now, they only reviewed 40 emails in her inbox. In a letter to members of Congress yesterday, the Inspector General of the Intelligence Community concluded that her emails contained material from the intelligence community that should have been considered secret at the time it was sent, the second highest level of classification.
Hmm.
They were classified when they were sent and are classified now, said Andrea Williams, a spokeswoman for the Inspector General.
Yeah. Okay.
So we'll see how this one develops.
Right. I would love to know who those two AGs are. You know, to what extent is this just another political witch hunt?
It could be. I mean, generally speaking, the inspectors general are...
U.S. Inspectors General, who is a Bush appointee, there have been questions raised about their impartiality. Generally speaking, mm-hmm. they are viewed as pretty impartial.
Yeah.
So we'll see how this one develops.
Okay. What else?
Transportation Secretary Anthony Fox said today the government's opened a price-gouging investigation involving five airlines that allegedly raised airfares in the Northeast after a deadly Amtrak crash in Philadelphia in May disrupted rail service. The five airlines are Delta, American, United, Southwest, and JetBlue. And Transportation sent letters today to them wanting information on their prices before and after the May the 12th train crash. The reports that some airlines increased fares to as high as $2,300 following the train crash.
Whoa.
Yes.
Just like from D.C. to New York, you mean?
Yes, they're looking at routes like Dulles and Reagan, Philadelphia to Newark, things like that.
Wow.
Yes. Couldn't be naughty.
Yeah. I flew during that time from D.C. to New York because I couldn't take the train and I had to be in New York. And my recollection is it was like a $600 fare. And I thought at the time, you know, I remember when they used to run the shuttle and it was $80, you know, each way. I was pretty surprised. Yeah. Anyway, back to you.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has set up a vote to repeal Obamacare in a bid to appease conservatives upset over a second planned vote to revive the Export-Import Bank. So it's sort of a trade-off. You get your Export-Import Bank vote, but we're going to have a go at repealing Obamacare. Both of these, of course, attached to the highway bill, which is being debated even as we speak. And that vote is likely to be on Sunday. Yes, they're working the weekend.
Amazing. In the Senate anyway, right?
In the Senate.
Yeah, I can't imagine John Boehner doing that unless they bring another case of gin. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
We'll be back. Actually, Shane and Danielle will be back. Shano and Danielle will be back. Or Danielle and Shano will be back. Whatever. Anyhow, I got to go do a TV show. Well, stick around. Stick around. It's going to be a great hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Obviously, I am not Tom Hartman. He had to run this afternoon, but he'll be back on Monday. It is Anything Goes Friday, so all of
it's
your...
It's really Anything Goes Now.
It's really Anything Goes Now. That's right. All bets are off. If you're holding for Tom, any of those topics that we've already discussed today are still open. You're still welcome to call in, as well as anything else that's on your mind, because it is Anything Goes Friday during Anything Goes Summer.
It's double anything.
Yes, it's like Anything Goes Squared.
Okay.
So, before we get back to your calls, there's lots of people who still want to weigh in on this horrific shooting on Sandra Bland. Lots of big stories, Social Security cuts. I wanted to also throw two more stories in there, into the mix, as if we don't have enough to talk about already.
Sure, why not?
Sometimes stories catch my eye. Like the fact that having a butt has never been so dangerous. I kid you not. A federal, this from Bloomberg News, Natalie Kitroff, hopefully I'm pronouncing that correctly, a federal appeals court in Cincinnati ruled earlier this week, that if somebody accidentally calls another individual, accidentally butt dials another person, they have no expectation of privacy. They have no right of privacy.
It just seems absolutely insane to me. But you need to get into the reasoning on it first.
This case involved an executive assistant of a Kentucky airport board. She was on the phone with an executive of her company, hung up after making him some flight arrangements. And when he put his phone in his pocket, he accidentally called her back. What followed was a 90-minute conversation of this executive talking to other individuals about how he was going to fire her boss, the CEO of the board. So being a good executive assistant, she took extensive notes and even went as far as recording part of this conversation and having it professionally enhanced, which she then provided to her boss as well as other members of the board. Obviously, he sued, saying she had violated his privacy. He did not authorize her to listen into these conversations, and he lost. Not once, but twice. A federal appeals court said this week, quote, "A person who knowingly operates a device that is capable of inadvertently exposing his conversations to a third-party listener and fails to take simple precautions to prevent such exposure does not have a reasonable expectation of privacy."
Which is insanity.
It is.
Absolute insanity. First of all, they're kind of turning the right of privacy or expectations of privacy on their head. And in this electronic age, can you imagine that?
Right.
If this really stays the rule.
We're all carrying microphones and cameras with us.
You buy a television that's a smart TV
or
you know, iPad, iPhone, sitting in this studio. There's microphones everywhere. Is it incumbent upon us to go out and grab our privacy, or do we have the right of privacy and then we give it up by doing something affirmative?
Right.
Not to get too wonky, but we all have a right of privacy. We have to do something to give it up. And accidentally dialing someone does not give it up, I would argue. I think the court's wrong here.
Well, and we want to know what you think. You know, if you butt dial someone, if you put your phone in your pocket and you call another individual, should you have a right to privacy? Should they have to hang up? I mean, I know morally what I would do. We've all received that call. We've all made that call, or most of us. And I hang up. After realizing that somebody is pocket dialing me, I hang up as to not overhear. You know, it's uncomfortable.
It makes me feel creepy.
Yeah. I don't want to spy on individuals. But if I was a corporation or government.
Notice you use the term spying.
Yes.
Even if it was a butt dial, you're using the term spying, which it implies right in it, because it does feel like spying to me, that privacy still is there.
Yes.
You should expect privacy, unless you affirmatively say, I'm going to go, you know, talk in public, or I'm going to talk to this third person, or I'm going to put it on the radio, or magnify it, or amplify it, or whatever it is. You have to do something. If it's an accident, I don't believe you can give it up.
And what would you do is my question. You know, if somebody calls you and you overhear a really personal or controversial discussion, do you hang up? Do you let that person know that they're pocket dialing people, that maybe they should lock their phone? Or do you listen in? I mean,
doesn't the court kind of base this on the fact that you can lock your phone up and it gives a little tutorial on how to do this? Well, that's fine and good for a cell phone that you have control over. Allegedly, depending on which apps you've agreed to.
Yes.
But what about different devices that don't allow you to do this?
Right. The judge in this case, Judge Danny Boggs, he helpfully provided the attorneys in the case with a link to, quote, prevent unwanted butt dialing with a smart pocket guard. And it was an app that protects your phone from butt dialing from the judge. It's only, fun fact, only the second time the word butt dial has ever been used in a court proceeding. That we know of. Yes. So, and one other one, since we've been talking a lot about police today and about police brutality, police practices that we want changed, we want reformed, I thought I would give one shout out to what I thought was a pretty great idea by a local police department, and it's kind of a fun story. San Bernardino Police Department had a great idea to get people who were texting and driving and not wearing their seatbelt. And they played on the fact that people tend to ignore those in need. What a shameful part of the human experience that we turn away from homeless people, that we ignore them at traffic lights. And the police capitalized on this. They stood at intersections with a sign that stated very clearly, I am not homeless. I am San Bernardino police looking for cell phone and seatbelt violations. people were so adamant to ignore the person they thought was homeless so that they didn't have to give up a dollar
now,
or...
The sign was on a piece of, like, corrugated cardboard and
yes,
in marker.
Yes, big, huge sign.
But it was in marker.
Right.
It kind of resembled, you know, the type of sign you
yes.
would see from someone, you know, on the corner.
Yes, and over the following 4 hours of operation, the police got 33 cell phone violations, 15 seatbelt violations, and found 5 cars that were being driven by people who were unlicensed. But first off, as human beings, I think there's something so wrong about refusing to acknowledge an individual standing right next to you because you don't want to admit that they might need some help. Even if it's a handshake and a, hey, you know, I see you're suffering, buddy, and I might not have cash in my pocket, but I'm with you. You know, they played up on that and ended up also fighting one of my pet peeves, which is people who text while driving.
Oh, man. Because so, I drive in every day with you.
Yes. So, I mean, hey, we've spent a lot of time, I know Shane and I have, every time we filled in for Tom, mm-hmm. criticizing actions by the police. I think this one was one of their better actions. I could be wrong. I would love to hear your thoughts. You know, this is at a stoplight. Should people be penalized for picking up their cell phone at a red light?
If it's against the law, and so long as they issue the citation in a respectful manner and don't yank people out of cars and threaten them with tasers and beat them up.
And sure. Hearing about this story, would you be more likely, you heard about it, so will you look twice now when you're at that stoplight and you see a homeless person and maybe give them the time of day, let alone, you know, 50 cents you might have in your pocket or... hello, how are you doing? I recognize that you are also a human being standing in front of me, because sometimes that can make a whole difference in somebody else's life. So two big stories, in addition to all of the huge topics that we have going on today, and we're going to get into all of those and more in the rest of this Anything Goes Friday. So don't go anywhere. Danielle and Shano sitting in for Tom, and we'll be back with your calls right after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
What's on your mind? 202-536-3270. Back with more right after this. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program here on Free Speech TV. Let's check in with Steve in Phoenix, Arizona, watching on the Dish Network. Steve, thanks for hanging out with us today.
You betcha. Hey, Danielle. Hey, Shano. Just wanted to say there, your first story there gives a little new credence to the term CYA.
I love it.
Yes. I wish I had a rim shot there for you, Steve. Excellent point.
You betcha. You betcha. You know, I wanted to make a point about Ed here, but, you know, there's so many stories here today, you know, about Bush wanting to get rid of Social Security, Medicare, under attack, you know, and the disability, especially Social Security disability. You know, all these 10-cent millionaires who are voting Republican better think twice, I'll tell you, because one of these days they're going to be on the wrong side of the story.
Yeah.
And it's going to be horrific for them.
You know, I noticed in the Bernie coverage people playing clips of him from the 80s and kind of the tone covering him like, he's just said the same thing for 30 years, so there it's not important. But 30 years ago he was saying, you know, all of the wealth is concentrated in 2%. Of the American public today, saying 0.1%. I'm guessing that the difference there, that almost 2%, whatever, 1.9%, probably thought that they were going to continue to hold on to all that wealth. Don't you, Steve?
It's possible. It's possible.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I'm telling you, it's getting sucked out of the middle class more and more. And anybody can have a twist of fate, and you might be doing good one day, and the next day, you know, it's completely, your world will be turned upside down.
Yep.
But, you know, what I wanted to speak about Ed here was, you know, Ed's on Bernie is on Ed's show, probably more than anybody's, even more than the, you know, Tom Hartman show. And, now that Bernie is surging, you know, this is kind of a convenient way to muzzle Ed, get him off the air, and kind of shut down some of the Bernie narrative coverage. And what's your thoughts?
It's certainly one theory. I think the anti-corporate talk, the speaking out against the TPP, is definitely...
it's part of the same continuum.
Yeah, exactly.
It's definitely part of the same, what we're talking about, the continuum of in terms of, you know, someone who's pro-worker, pro-union.
He's ruffled a few feathers, you know, in the corporate world, and but they need ruffling.
They sure do.
Yeah.
I know you guys have a lot of callers, and I'm just going to let you guys finish up here.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate the time to talk to you folks. You guys are always nice on the air. It's wonderful that you're filling in.
Thank you, Steve. That was very, very nice of you. And, you know, whatever we could do to get Bernie more coverage, to get any progressive candidate, progressive values, progressive issues discussed, I think is a good thing. And whether that comes from the Black Lives Matter movement, whether it comes from progressives just like you and I talking about it today, or whether it comes from, you know, Ed Schultz podcast is fine with me. But Steve, thanks for watching and for hanging out with us today. We'll
I think
be
he's
back.
Already gone. We still have another 10 seconds here. Just
you're giving me, okay.
I was giving you the, we're wrapping
gotcha,
up.
Gotcha. Lots more in store today here on the Tom Hartman program. People already want to weigh in on whether or not you have an expectation of privacy during a butt dial. I knew everybody would have an opinion on this because everybody's done it. So we'll be back with more. Stick around. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman program. I'm Danielle here with Shano, sitting in for the last hour for Tom today, as opposed to last hours. The great documentary that you could see.
Actually, when
over...
he asked about last hours this morning, I thought, were we talking about the movie or the last hour of the show today?
GreenWorldRising.org. Check it out if you haven't seen it already. Let's get back to the phones. Lots of people, lots of issues today. And we'll check in with Linda. Listening on Sirius in Deerfield Beach, Florida. Linda, thanks for listening to the Tom Hartman program today.
Well, thank you for filling in. You guys do a wonderful job.
Thank
you. We really appreciate you. I'm piggybacking on that your previous caller. I think he hit the nail on the head. But what he didn't finish with is the fact that the seniors, once they're done tearing it away from the baby boomers, which is me, I'm 55, so I have, you know, quite a few years before I can enjoy Social Security. They're going to take it away from them. They're going to gouge them. They're going to stop paying for things. Jeb Bush is lying to them right now. He's telling them, "Oh, we're not going to touch you. Nothing's going to change for you." That's not true.
Yeah, it's the same we hear on every one of these issues, whether it's Medicare or Social Security. We're not going to touch the people receiving it now. It's going to start in 5 years or 10 years. If it is such a good policy and they stand by it and that this is the right answer for everybody, why not institute it right now? Because they know.
Well, that's seniors are kind of, you know, they're I hate to say this, but majority of them that I just got done talking to one, I said, listen to her. Look, she's telling the truth. And he was like, "Oh, no, that's not true." And I said, "No, it's very true. This was his brother's dream, and he's going to fulfill it if he becomes president," which I don't think he's going to get it. I believe, like Tom, I think Scott Walker's going to get the nomination. But there's one other thing I did want to slip in there, that the federal employees, what they're trying to do to us. The TSP fund, it's the G fund, they want to steal our interest to pay off the debt. And I don't think a lot of people know about this because it only pertains to federal employees. But this is another way they're going after our pensions. They want to steal all that interest that we've put in there. They're trying to go after us now, too.
And then years down the road, they'll say, "Oh, my God, the pension is underfunded."
Yep.
"Oh, darn those federal workers. We're going to have to get rid of it altogether."
Yep.
Right?
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Like they've done in the States.
They did it as an experiment, Linda. Thank you very much for calling and for listening on Sirius. They did it in the States as an experiment, mm-hmm. and, hey, federal interest on federal workers?
Yeah.
You know they'd love to get their hands on that.
Absolutely, without a doubt. And going back to the Social Security and retirement-type plans, insurance against old age, you know, poverty and old age, Social Security, for so long, those same people who've wanted to privatize this all along and phase it out have been trying to convince young people that you're never going to get it anyways.
Yep.
It's going to go bankrupt. By the time you're that age, you are never going to get it. So therefore, invest all your money in 401ks. You get very little when you're we're going to get all that money in the churn of investing, the 10 or 20% that IRAs or 401ks cost. And on top of it, when we do privatize it and we say we're not going to touch people who are current retirees, but you young people, you're not going to have it. They say, well, we weren't going to get it anyways. So this has been a long process of convincing people that you're never going to get it. So don't worry about it. And that's how they can get younger people to perhaps say, sure, I'll vote for Jeb Bush because I wasn't going to get Medicare anyways.
Yep. And his comment, if you go and read the text or listen to it, is couched exactly in those terms, is I don't want people to have nothing in the future. Well, who's discussing having nothing in the future? Only one side of the aisle
they're fighting
is
a
making
straw.
That argument.
They're fighting a straw argument that,
right.
that this is not going to be here. We've told you it's not going to be there, so we're going to make sure it's not there.
Right.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy rather than an inevitability.
Speaking of inevitable, it is inevitable if you have a cell phone that you may butt dial people on occasion. And Linda in Salem, New Jersey, watching on Free Speech TV, had some thoughts on that. Linda, you don't think he should have an expectation of privacy?
Absolutely not. He could have been anybody. He could have been President Obama, for God's sake. People who have cell phones need to be responsible for them. They need to be careful about where those transmissions are going. Personally, if you butt-dialed me and I realized it was an inadvertent thing, yeah, I'd hang up. But I still don't think that you have any expectation of privacy there.
Fair enough. I think there's definitely more than one perspective on this. I think that to some degree, our society has just stopped believing there's an expectation to privacy at all. So I think that's at play here. It is your responsibility. We all know that these devices have microphones, have cameras. If you were changing in a restroom, you wouldn't have your camera open.
Certainly not on purpose.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, Linda,
the company that owned the restroom would have theirs open.
Exactly. exactly. But thank you very much for weighing in and for hanging out with us there in Salem, New Jersey. Let's jump really quickly to Ivan in Chicago, Illinois, listening on WCPT. Thanks for listening to the Tom Hartman program, Ivan.
Hey. Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hey. Tom kind of hit on what I was going to say before he left, but thanks to the NRA and our insane gun laws, cops are paranoid and fearful every time they are involved with the public. And it has allowed those cops who are racist pigs to get away with shooting first and asking questions later.
Yeah. I do think the NRA specifically plays both sides of this issue because their reasoning for why, we should all be allowed to have AR-15s or whatever assault rifle, you're legally allowed to have is that criminals might have them too. But any attempt that we make to make sure criminals don't have them is blocked by none other than the NRA. Is that about what you perceive, Ivan?
Every time. These gun laws are insane. How many times are we going to have kids shot down in their classroom? People going to the movie killed.
Every other developed country in the world has figured this problem out, and we haven't. So either we're going to learn something and solve it, or we're going to continue to witness these tragic events. Over and over and over again. Sorry, frog in my throat. Thank you, Ivan, for the call. We'll be back with more.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Danielle and Shano in for Tom, and we'll be back with more right after this. The Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle here with Shano in for Tom for the remainder of today's show. Tom just had to step out early. He will be back on Monday. It is Anything Goes Summer. It is Anything Goes Friday, and we're taking your calls on Lots of topics. We have Sandra Bland, Donald Trump, Bernie Sanders, and butt dialing all on the board amongst other calls. That's quite a list.
Butt dialing and Donald Trump. Say no more.
Yes. I feel like there's some redundancy there, but I'm not quite sure what it is. So let's check in with Bill, listening on Sirius in Sarasota, Florida. Bill, you had some thoughts on Sandra Bland. Uh-oh. Bill, if you can hear me, hang up and give us a call back. We can't hear you. Let's check in with Morris in Long Beach, California. How's it going today, Morris?
It's just going fantastic. Beautiful weather out here in the city of Long Beach.
I sure, rub it in as we here on the East Coast sit in swelter.
Oh, I'm just loving to see you. Listen, Mr. Sanders does not have a problem with black people at all. That's the narrative that the Democratic machine is trying to create. Mr. Sanders needs to continue the narrative that he's doing now, just talking about the things that he's talking about right now. I would suggest that he go to the People's Ten Commandments, which Tom and I put together 2 years ago. He is talking about the first two, getting a constitutional amendment, money out of politics, but there's eight more to go. And that's the platform. Instead of vote for Bernie, the candidate, you know, vote for this platform, and I think that'll spread like a wildfire. The GO group, which is responsible or have, which is a prison, part of the prison industrial complex, is in the Clinton campaign. There's no way that a black person in this country could vote for Hillary Clinton. Her husband put 1 million of street police on the streets. And the number of people going to prison just escalated.
Morris, I'm going to, you know, with as much as I love Senator Sanders, and I think that our nation needs to seriously change the for-profit private prison system, I don't think it's fair to hold Hillary responsible for things that occurred under the Bill Clinton administration. You know, I wouldn't want to be responsible if she is her own person and she has a progressive voting record.
Look at her campaign, sister. Look at who's in her campaign right now. A man or interest lobbyist from the GO group. What does that say?
Well, you know, it depends on what role he's playing there. But, I agree with you that Bernie Sanders doesn't have to worry anything to worry about when it comes to the African-American black community. I speak to a lot of people in my community and they don't agree with these attacks on him. And our community, I will say, is probably about 99% black African-American and a lot of Bernie bumper stickers in that area.
There
are tons of events, by the way, in that community, July 29th, and they're mostly already at capacity.
Which is why I'm glad we RSVP'd already.
But, Morris, you know, always enjoy speaking with you. Thank you for listening there in California. Let's jump to Helen, listening on 1470 AM in Ithaca, New York. Helen, you have a story.
Hey. Good afternoon, everybody. Oh, yeah. That happened to me, but that I, well, accidentally, in the beginning, overheard a long conversation. And it was with my brother, who was seeing either a psychiatrist or a therapist or something. But I had called him, and he picks up the phone, and then I hear him talking to someone else. And I'm like, Patrick, like, say hello or something. Don't be so rude, you know?
Yeah.
And then I realized, what is this? So I just stay on the phone, and I listened. And I heard, like, the whole freaking hour session, practically. But the funny thing was, I'm like, why are you going to this idiot for advice? The psychiatrist seemed like such a misogynist, because he was saying things like, well, my brother is being a snob about he's dating this woman that isn't as intellectually, right for him or something. And I'm like, shut up, you know. And the guy, the psychiatrist going, well, yes, oh, I also married someone who's intellectually inferior to me, and she still has a few reproductive years left. And I'm just going like, what?
Wow.
Yeah, Helen, I cannot say that I would be able to hang up. That's like walking into a soap opera, you know, to hear such things. But that begs the point in that it's also that, especially in that situation, that expectation of personal.
Right. What if it was a conversation between someone and their lawyer, someone and their priest, someone and their psychiatrist, someone and their spouse? I mean, there's all kinds of extra legal protections for those conversations that this court.
Well, I wasn't breaking the law.
No, you weren't.
No, no, I know you weren't. I'm just saying that the court in their decision didn't take those types of things into account either.
But here's the question, Helen. Have you told him that you listened into that conversation?
Yeah.
I was going to say, she just did.
I let him get out of the office, and I called him back, and I said, you know what you did? I called you. You didn't say hello. I heard this whole session with your psychiatrist or whatever. I said, you got to fire this guy. I said, and then he didn't believe me at first. I said, yes, I'll tell you what I heard. So I told him what I heard so he knew I was in line. And I said, that's the worst advice I've ever heard in my life. You know.
Well, hey, in that case, maybe it got a beloved family member to a better mental health professional. We'll say there's an upside.
And trust me, he has no expectation of privacy anymore.
Yes.
It's gone.
Helen,
gone,
thank you
sailed.
For sharing with all of us that amazing story. But see, that's the thing. When you're the fly on the wall, what is the right thing to do? Do you hang up? Do you let the person know? I have a person in my life who constantly butt dials me, sometimes multiple times in a row, just, you know, from the car, from the pocket. And I usually call them back if lock your phone. You keep calling me. But Dad, if you're listening, lock your phone.
I also know that people tend to express themselves off the cuff a lot more.
Yeah.
In certain situations, and probably if they took those 3 or 10 seconds to kind of reflect, if they knew, they wouldn't say the same things. And actually
right.
don't even think them 10 seconds later. They're just kind of, you know, flying with it. So I don't think you're actually getting the real truth.
Yeah, and
you're kind of getting gut reactions in certain situations.
I don't know if it's just me, but I feel wildly uncomfortable as soon as I realize I hang up. I can't. I just think of what I would feel like if it was me. If somebody was listening
right.
into my private conversation with, say, with Shane, and we were, you know, expressing our thoughts about something to find out that someone was listening in, I would be very upset. So I try and practice that same rule. But I don't know, if my brother called me from a therapist session about how his wife is intellectually inferior, I think it would be difficult to hang up that call. I think I might be swayed.
You're just so honest, Danielle.
Yes, I'm being honest, and at the risk of feeling myself blushing. Let's check in with Marty in Evergreen Park, Illinois, listening on, I'm guessing, WCPT, Marty?
That is correct. Well, today it's on the website, but how you guys doing?
We're doing very great. Thank you.
Excellent. Yeah, you know, I just wanted to chime in that I think even if you accidentally dial somebody, if you're not intentionally initiating that conversation, I think that you should still feel like you have expectations of privacy. If you're unaware that you're making a call, unaware that you are transmitting, you know, your conversation,
isn't it kind of inherent in the word expectation? How can you expect something when you have done it by accident? Is it, you know what I'm saying? If it's an expectation of privacy, you expect privacy. Right. If you do something that by accident you don't know it's occurring, that expectation can't change because you're still expecting it to be private. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
See, and I look at the bigger picture, and that's where I get concerned that there would be any case law, any precedent that says if you're carrying a cell phone and you accidentally call somebody or you accidentally leave a line open, that your right to privacy is dissolved. Because what if that other side is a corporation? What if it's the government? What if it's your boss? You know, are there certain circumstances where they can listen in, and it could really be at your detriment. In this case, I'm guessing a guy who lost his job and filed a lawsuit.
Big time. And on top of it, think about it. There are certain states and jurisdictions in this country that, for example, you and I are having a phone call. We don't know each other. I call you up. I can record the phone call in some states without you knowing it. But there's other states where all the parties to a phone call have to consent. Isn't this even if you take the court right here and say, you know, your butt dialing, wouldn't the other side have to consent? You know, I guess they would automatically just by the recording of it. But, you know, there's different rules in different states. And it just seems to imply too much when we have this electronic device that essentially by putting it in your pocket, you've given up your rights.
Yeah. But, you know, as Marty says, I think that, You know, when it's an accident, that's different. Marty, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, there's a number of things. I mean, one is there are apps that you can install on somebody's phone unsuspectedly and actually turn on and off their microphone.
Yeah.
So it's like, will you, you know, that and somebody carrying a phone at any time, you know, could have somebody turn it on and start broadcasting whatever it is that you're doing. You know, or what if you go to, let's say you end a conversation and you thought your phone was hung up and it wasn't, and carry on another conversation with somebody else and the other person on the line is still listening.
Right, and then to draw the other side, what if the call you overheard, somebody was in danger? What if they made a rule that said you can't listen in if somebody butt dials you, but someone butt dials you in the middle of being accosted, in the middle of being held up? Does the rule apply then? You know,
exigent
you can see,
circumstances.
See both sides.
Circumstances.
Marty, thank you very much for spending time with us there in Evergreen Park, Illinois, and for listening on WCPT. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Back with your calls and more right after this. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman program here on Free Speech TV. Let's check in with Dave in Canton, Michigan, watching on DirecTV. Thanks for spending time with us today, Dave. Dave, if you can hear me, hang up and give us a call right back because I can't hear you there. Let's check in with Steve in North Troy, Vermont, watching on the Dish Network. Steve, can you hear me?
Yeah, yes, I can. Can you hear me?
I can. So you had some thoughts on Sandra Bland. Go ahead.
Yeah. I noticed this when I was listening to the audio. They were running it on a show earlier, and I wasn't watching the video. I was just listening to the audio. And when, when the officer calls dispatch and requests assistance, you can hear dispatch saying, you know, officer requests assistance for a 1096. And a 1096 is cop talk for a mental case, excuse me for using the old term.
Now, I've been under the impression that those police codes vary from state to state and sometimes even department to department. I remember, what was it, the Ferguson case that we were all listening to hours of police radio. Is that a universal code?
Well,
for
a lot of them are standard, especially the higher numbers, so that, you know, if you go from one department to a next, or
you don't have
know,
to relearn them
county.
All.
Now, what was that code again?
1096.
1096. Okay.
Yeah, was, Shane's you know, looking it up. But
yeah, you can hear him, and that alerts everybody in the system that he's dealing with a mentally unstable person.
Well, we're going to look it up here now. If that is correct, I mean, how do you think that affects our view of the case?
It certainly influences anybody who shows up to help them, anybody within listening range, really, because it's like it prejudices them to the fact that, you know, that he's dealing with a supposed mental case, excuse me, you know.
Yeah.
Well, it's called mental subject. I'm looking it up right now. I don't see one that's specific to Texas, so it could be that they're using universal code.
And something 1096 is universal code for that.
Mental subject
right.
is what it's called.
Well, Steve, you may have shed one more piece of information about this tragedy, and we'll have to see how that's incorporated into the police discussion of it. But thank you for bringing it up. I know I certainly hadn't caught that. I don't know how it changes my view of the case.
Yeah, and I think a reason a lot of people are snapping lately, too, is these SSRI antidepressants. There was a great documentary called The Dark Side of a Pill and how Eli Lilly had lied to the German authorities to get the SSRIs approved in the 80s in Germany.
Yeah.
And it's unbelievable. Between 10 to 25% of people taking SSRIs will develop what they call activation syndrome.
Well, I know she was on, according to the documents, Keppra, but I'm not. Is that an SSRI?
I don't think we have any evidence of a background like that. And Tom talks about that a lot, what SSRIs do.
Yeah, but just medication side effects, I think, in general, you could do a whole week's worth of shows on it, on how much you know, how dangerous some of these medications are, and yet it's really not discussed with people. It's not understood in this case, possibly even by law enforcement, who should know that stuff and know the effects on what happens if somebody doesn't get a medication that's so important. Thank you very much for watching Free Speech TV there in Vermont. We'll be back with more. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle here with Shano, sitting in for the last few minutes with for Tom here, getting your thoughts on lots of things, including butt dialing, my important topic of the hour. come on, it happens to everybody. We've all had those very frank conversations and then went, oh,
It happens to me a lot because I have an older phone that,
right.
You know, I can't lock because the top button broke about 2 years ago or maybe
yes.
a year ago. So I can't even lock the screen so that if I set my phone down and tap it with something, I dial people
yes.
all the time.
Thankfully, we are also frank in discussions pretty much all the time, as most people who know us are.
Yeah.
Let's check in with Danette in Hinesville, Georgia, listening on Sirius. Thanks for listening to the Tom Hartman Program, Danette.
Yes, the United States of America is going crazy. We're talking about police brutality and Donald Trump and butt dialing. I mean, if that does not talk about the pathology of our country, I don't know what does.
I think that the conversation is more about privacy, but I certainly agree with the sentiment.
Well, yes, I know it is about privacy, and we've spoken about privacy before when you were hosting the show, when we were talking about Edward Snowden. And I am sorry, but white America has been shocked into the reality that they do not have the rights that they like to envision that they enjoy. This country has never been one about privacy and, you know, the rights of the citizen over the rights of the state. It's always about the state. And so I don't think that we should expect privacy. Now, whether the Constitution says that we're due privacy, the Constitution also says that there should be due process.
Mm-hmm.
And we have dealt this summer and actually this year, last 2 years, with a lot of issues where people are not receiving due process and end up dead
yeah.
in the hands of law enforcement.
And we're still waiting to find out if Sandra Bland was another one of those cases. You know, there's still so many unanswered questions.
She was. I mean,
yeah.
whether she killed herself or not, to be honest with you, I am someone who I like to talk, you know, and share my thoughts. But if I was in that situation, I would be really, really terrified. And I know that I would not have survived the slave days. I would have been someone that would have killed myself and my children rather than live in slavery. So I don't know. I mean, whether she killed herself or not, the fact that she was so roughed up by the
yeah.
police is absolutely unacceptable. Like, it's just not acceptable. And if you have a smartphone where you have the ability to lock your phone, because
yeah.
the government could care less about your rights and your privacy.
Yeah, I agree
yeah,
with you.
And the expectation of privacy actually probably is the wrong term. That's more of a turn of phrase for in legalese. But we should certainly, I believe, should demand more privacy, don't you think?
Well, you can't demand privacy from a government that is unwilling to give it to you. The government has the guns. They have the law enforcement behind them. They have the ability to, jail people, kill people and get away with it and not have to be held accountable for their actions. So to demand it, yeah, you can pick it and you can say, I demand my privacy. But Sandra Bland was demanding her rights and she got her head slammed against the concrete and she either committed suicide or potentially died from a brain bleed because her head was injured.
Yeah,
so
we don't know.
We can demand all we want. It doesn't mean that we're going to get it, and it doesn't mean that we actually have the right to life.
I completely agree.
But
because,
fighting.
Right, just because that happened to Sandra Bland, and it's happened so many times and time and time and time and time and time and time again, then we must demand it. We must demand it so that it doesn't keep happening. If we don't demand it, if we don't expect it, then it's just going to keep happening. We must demand it, I think.
Well, it's been happening for 400 years.
It has.
So as a black person, you know, the Charleston shooting really shook me up.
Yeah.
To the point that I was ready to move out of the country. Like, I really don't believe that black people have, we can't expect to be safe and secure. We just can't. And we can demand it. I can petition. I can speak to you on the phone. Thankfully, we don't live in a country where the Gestapo is going to be knocking on my door because they can hear my voice and know exactly where I am. But the point is that if we are really realistic about what happens in this country to black and brown people, we should not expect anything. I mean, this government is for white rich people.
Yeah,
and that's just how it is.
I can certainly, you know, hear everything you're saying, but I'm just not willing to accept that. I'm not willing to accept that that's just status quo. And we all stand by and say, okay, that's fine.
Well,
you know,
what I'm saying, Danielle, what I'm saying is that it is the status quo. And once we accept and acknowledge that that is the reality, rather than those of us who are hopeful that it will disappear, rather than be just hopeful that it will disappear, if we acknowledge this is real.
Oh, yeah.
Black people are dying. This is real. This is real. This is real. Our government does not respect our rights. It is not for the people, by the people. And if we acknowledge that, like Tom does on a daily basis, we're certainly in a better position than those whose heads are in the clouds and believe that the United States of America is the panacea of freedom.
Yeah, you know I agree with you. It's the same. I think that I only wish the people who keep responding when they are asked to discuss or talk about the Black Lives Matter, either the hashtag, the movement, whatever, and they come back with All Lives Matter, I really wish that they could sit and speak with somebody like you, because what I think about that the name of that movement is Black Lives Matter too. That for 400 years, white lives have mattered. If a white kid goes missing, you know, we all see it on the news. Black lives want to matter too, and we need to fight and make sure that that becomes reality. Danette, awesome points. I certainly can't top it, and you got the last word of the show. So thank you very much for your passion and for sharing that with us. You have a great weekend. Thanks for spending time with us here on the Tom Hartman Program. Tom will be back Monday. Lots of news to follow, lots of things to discuss then. Thanks.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.